nationalism and mercantilism, the consequences will be grim, especially as Beijing continues on its own damaging course of subsidized excess capacity, predatory export policies, and economic coercion. The risk of the United States and China playing by their own rules, with power the only real constraint, is contagion. If the two largest economies in the world operate outside the rules-based system, other countries will increasingly do the same, leading to rising uncertainty, drags on productivity, and lower overall growth, unquote. Blame should, however, fall mainly on the U.S., for while Trump is rejecting globalization, the Chinese are embracing it. If the entry of their goods into U.S. markets is proving too expensive, they are moving exports and production elsewhere. The Chinese have become Global South leaders through their Belt and Road Initiative, which provides development loans, and through the export of goods, services, and production lines, particularly to Africa and Southeast Asia, but increasingly to Latin America. The more trade pressure Trump exerts, the better the Chinese look to many developing countries. I'm Mel Gertoff of the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Mel Gertoff, and Hannah Francis. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Simone Perez, Judith Ruiz Branch, Mike Moen, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our fall fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Hannah Francis. I am joined by underscore native news reporter Jarrett Work.
Jarrett Work. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. My on-air white clay name is Thaynakya. My English name is Jarrett Work, and I'm a reporter and photographer with underscore Native News.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Of course. So the article that we're going to talk about today is a really, really huge story. It's titled Global Solidarity at the Mouth of the Klamath. Four members of the Klamath Basin tribes who have fought for the river dams removal, and organized the historic first descent of the newly free-flowing waters, the signing of an international accord brought into sharp focus with worldwide implications of their local triumph. So this is pretty huge.
Right.
Could you first give us a little bit of background about the history of dams on the Klamath and the recent undamming?
Right, so there has been a series of dams that have gone up on the Klamath River, you know, for over 100 years at this point. And just this past fall, four of those seven dams were removed in allowing the river to free flow. There's a couple of dams that are still up, but they are similar to like the natural rock features that used to hold water back up towards the headwaters of the river. And this past summer, last month actually, Native youth indigenous youth from across the world came together to share this moment together and to really live out their ancestors' prayers. You have to think about how these dams have disconnected the people that have been living along the Klamath, like I was saying, for thousands of years. And this moment is, you know, like what they've been preparing for with like the Salmon Wars and all these other things that the Native nations along the river have been fighting for these past decades, you know, generations at this point. And I was able to attend the tail end of the descent. I think we were on the river for about 4 or 5 days. I don't even remember how many days it was. They all just blended together. But it was really amazing to see these kids that have been paddling for nearly a month on the river, right? Like, not having access to showers, not having access to like a good bed to sleep in. And these kids would still wake up every day and just be so excited to be able to do this, to be able to experience this moment together and to like just be out connecting with the land and with the river that has helped, that has been the lifeline to their people since forever. You know what I mean? And I had an amazing time. We collaborated with the Oregon Public Broadcasting to put together a couple of different stories. This one was the third, second or third. I don't even remember at this point. It's just been a blur. I'm pretty sure this was like the third story to come out from that collaboration. And we are, after this interview, we're going to OPB to work with Jesse Sears, the Indigenous Affairs producer over there, to watch the film that OPB filmed. So they were able to join from the initial descent from the headwaters in Southern Oregon and followed a couple of different times, different trips, you know, jumping in on the river wherever they were at. And it was really cool because Jessie's also Indigenous. She's a Karuk woman. And for her to be able to collaborate with her on this story that I know means a lot to her as a Karuk person was just so much fun. And I definitely one of the top things of my reporting.
This, obviously, like you're saying, was like an international story and an international event. People came from all over the world to participate, including, you know, some of those youth were from all over. Can you tell me specifically about Puran from Chile and her experience of kayaking the Klamath, like why she went?
Of course. So a little bit before that, the youth that were participating in the descent, they did that through the Paddle Tribal Waters Program, which is underneath the organization, the nonprofit organization, Rios to Rivers. And they had been working with kids in the Klamath Basin for about 4 years at this point. And these students that were involved were able to attend indigenous-based, like indigenous-centered curriculum in places like Chile, and to travel to like Bolivia, and also through some of the other programs, like go to Africa and Canada to be able to learn how to whitewater raft down the free-flowing river, you know, like because of the dams were still in place during through this whole process, a lot of the kids didn't even like had never really seen the river moving the way it is now. And like they didn't have access, like Lyric was talking about in her reporting, like the access to outdoors. You have to think about kayaking as this sport, because it is a sport, right? But also Native people have been connected with the rivers and have been traveling through the rivers. Like those were ancestral highways. So it's like Native people had the connection with the river, but then when the dams came up and colonization came in, that starts that disconnect. And a lot of these kids, before even joining Paddle Tribal Waters, had never even stepped foot in a kayak. And now they went 310 miles down the largest dam removal project in the world. And they were able to connect with people through the Kayaking Moon initiative in Chile, where Perón and some of the other youth that were there. But then there was also indigenous youth from New Zealand that came to be able to participate and witness this, because what is happening here in the United States with colonization, it's just like in the impacts that Native people have with the government and a lot of the different things that are happening when it comes to rivers and dams going up. A lot of indigenous communities across the world are just now starting to see that, to see the impacts. Like in Chile, they are constructing dams that are huge. And that causes a lot of issues because they're not really informing the public. Like a lot of people will be out fishing on the river or just out on the river, and then they'll let some of the floodwaters out of the dams in Chile, and a lot of people pass that way. Like they end up, you know, drowning in the waters once they're released. And so for Perron and some of the other people, it was really important for them to see that it is possible for dams to be removed, that it is possible that their communities will one day see this, even though it's been a 100-plus-year-long fight for the Klamath Basin nations. But that still gave them hope, and that was a lot of the things that Perron had shared through her translator, that she was just really excited to be there and to see this moment and to witness history and to be able to take all of the things that she learned back home, so that they can continue to fight the fight against the dams and their access to water.
Thank you for that. Yeah, you mentioned that there are some people from New Zealand and even some from China as well. Like,
oh, it was crazy seeing just like, and it wasn't a huge group of people. It grew from the start. I think it started out with maybe a little over a dozen. I think there was about 17 kayakers at the beginning when they went in to the mouth, and then there was over 100 something at the final landing at the mouth of the Klamath River in below Rekwa Village. And one of the youth, I'm blanking her name, Kia Wiki, I think is her name. She's Maori and Klamath, no, where she's Maori and from the Klamath Basin. So for her to be able to have people from both of her homelands come together to be able to experience this moment was really special. And hearing those women and men that came from New Zealand and talking about the work that they're doing with similar issues with their government and how it's, they're really trying to come after their sovereignty and things of that sort. So just, it was just so inspiring to be able to witness everything, like the solidarity and talking about like this film, you know, global solidarity at the mouth of the Klamath. Like these people came together to write a demand letter and to create this accord where they're holding these systems of power accountable so that the dams that are in place can come down and no future dams will go up.
It's really incredible to see people from all over the world coming together for this. Right. I mean, it just goes to show like what a global issue this is.
Exactly.
Really. Another really important person in this whole project is Danielle Frank, who's the Director of Development and Community Relations for Rios to Rivers. Will you talk a little bit about her backstory and why she does what she does?
Right. Danielle Frank. This kid is, she is so amazing, and I could literally listen to her talk all day long. I'm like, I could tell that you were raised by community. I could tell that you were raised with your grandmas and your grandpas and stuff, because you are literally a 21-year-old elder. And one of the things that she got, like the youth along the trip kept teasing her about, is that she is an elder, but she just has so much knowledge and so much desire to just do good by her community and to really give back to the people that raised her. And I met Danielle a couple of years ago now, and she was one of the people, I've been following the story for a few years at this point. And Danielle and I met at the White House Tribal Youth Forum in Washington, D.C. She was there with a group of Native youth that were advocating for, you know, environmental issues, like all these different things that they were there to talk with people on. At the time, it was the Biden administration, about some of the issues that are impacting their communities directly. And that's when she brought up that they were planning, you know, the Klamath descent, and they were going to be the first people to descend down the free-flowing river. And the first descents of themselves are colonial in that aspect of being the first, right? So they were just really excited to be the original people, you know, they're all from those, from the basin, and they were really excited to do this for their people and for their families. And Danielle, the way that she talks about the work that she does, like, you could just see the passion in her face. You know, she literally lights up and, like, has hard conversations and talks about these different issues, and how she and other youth talked about the stories that they heard from their families, you know, all these years about preparing for this moment and everything, and about how even with the river, there are a lot of, there's a lot of hurt that comes with it too. And one of the sections of the river that Danielle was going down, had a lot of pain from their family. One of her dear loved ones had passed away at one of those rocks down the river. And she kept talking about how she was worried about how she would be feeling when they would go through that section. And as they were going through that section, like, the other youth that were on the river were, like, teasing her, and, like, somebody, like, helped, like, splash her with water and stuff, and were just, like, messing around with her. And then she didn't realize, but she had gone through that section where her loved one had passed. And when she turned back around, she saw all of these kids that were just having fun and laughing, and all about the just the intergenerational healing that came with all of this. And now she said that when she's talking about that section of the river, she doesn't have to have so much pain with that section of the river. Now she has these memories of joy, and these memories of triumph, and these memories of celebration that she gets to share with her future kids and grandkids, and all of those things. And I think that's just really special. I heard that a lot from a lot of the different youth, was how excited they are to share these stories with their kids and with their grandkids in the future. Like, this is incredible work, and to know that these kids got to experience this at such a young age, and to imagine where they're going to be when they're 30 or when they're 40, you know, like, these are future tribal chairmen, tribal chairs and leaders of their communities. And what an amazing opportunity to have that experience and to help shift that whole new narrative and to move forward in a good way, you know, and to not have to worry about all of these issues that they've had to worry about for the past multi-generations, you know, for the past over 100 years. And that, like, my biggest takeaway from the story is just the celebration of it all, and the solidarity, and just the happiness and the joy. And that's just so beautiful. And yeah, I'll just, yeah, we'll move on to the next question.
<That's> so sweet. And also, I don't know if I'll include this, but it kind of reminds me of, like, Adrienne Marie Brown's book called Pleasure Activism, which is all about, like, creating the change that you want to see in the world through, like, joy and, like, through community and, like, yeah, just, like, through that feeling of, like, solidarity and love.
Right.
Just really sweet.
Well, love. Because you have to think about it, you know, like... And that's also other things that some of the youth, it was really somber, like, in certain ways of them kind of feeling guilty that they get to, like, basically ride the coattails down the river in a way. But they also just talked about how proud they are and about how thankful they are that they get to live this experience for all the people that have fought for this moment, you know, and that they just get to carry that good medicine down the river and lead to the new healing that is coming from the Klamath River. You think about it, with the restoration efforts that are going on, this is going to be one of the sections of a river that has like nothing but native plant species living along the river now. They're doing a lot of planting seedlings that were, you know, plants and plant relatives that were living along the river just as long as the people were, you know. And it's really amazing to know that, like, a lot of this work is being done to just restore and reset. And I know it's, and that's also what a lot of people talked about, it's never going to be the same river that it was before, but they're excited for what it can become and what it's going to become.
Mm-hmm. I was also talking with Nika, y'all's colleague, a little while ago, about her article about the land that the Yurok tribe got back in mm-hmm. that area.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's like a lot of restoration being done all along the river and like, and off of it as well. Was there any like interaction with that land acquisition during this trip?
Not from the section that I joined the trip. But yeah, could we repeat that question one more time?
Yeah, sorry, it was a little bit of a mess. But like thinking about the land acquisition, I think it's like 47,000 acres mm-hmm. back to the Yurok tribe, is along that similar area of the Klamath River. Mm-hmm. And I know it is like only a certain section of that. But I'm curious how that land back movement affected this whole trip, if it did.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's okay. No. We can keep that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but yeah,
we didn't think about that much.
That's okay. No, that is a good question.
Yeah.
That is a really good question, and I just wouldn't want to speak from my person, you know?
Yeah.
So,
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, without referencing someone else who's, mm-hmm. who's there interacting in the community.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, thanks for saying you don't know. That's pretty valid. A couple of kayakers in your story also mentioned that there are already salmon returning to the river.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, kind of just part of that whole, like, restoration process.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about that?
Yeah. Ruby Williams was one of the youth kayakers that I was talking with, and she'd gone all over the world. Her and Jaden, they went to Africa together, and they are from the same area, and they were talking about just like how close they got together on those trips, and being, you know, thousands of miles, oceans away from their everything that they know, everyone that they love. So they were that little slice of home for each other. And when they came back and they were scouting out routes for the descent and, you know, just kind of like seeing things before they bring all these people out on the river, they were out by Iron Gate Dam and they were paddling up the river. And that's when Ruby said she looked down and she saw like juvenile salmon swimming alongside of her and Jaden. And like, I just thought that was so beautiful. You know what I mean? Like these, and she said like that little guy knew his way after all these years, you know? And it's just so, so awesome to be able to just like know that like the salmon are returning, the people are returning, the native plants are returning. Like all of this is just such a beautiful and healing story. And, you know, I know we're not gonna stop mm-hmm. covering it now, and I was talking with people about going down and documenting some of their restoration efforts with the planting of the native plants and other things, and then yeah, thinking of doing other stories on like the salmon returning too, like lyrics coverage of the Coquille River and the work that the Coquille Nation is doing. Like yeah, there's just a lot of really happy things that are happening, and for them to be talking about just how much they have seen the river change over the number of years that they've been doing this, and that, you know, a lot of these kids said they grew up and they were told to never swim in the Klamath because it's gross and it's full of algae and it's disgusting. But now, like, all of these kids were talking about how the water's cooler and the water's clearer and there's not as much algae in those certain areas, to little to no algae in other areas, you know? And I just think like that's, yeah, I just really happy for this community that they get to experience this and they get to have, you know, a healthy lifeline back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's still a lot of work to be done, mm-hmm. right? So
yeah.
What's next?
Yeah. So restoration efforts, like I was saying, you know, one of the things that Danielle said, like, this isn't the end. This is literally just the beginning, you know, and hearing how excited she was for the work to come. And Yeah, so this is definitely just the beginning, and hopefully there's other indigenous communities across the world that get to celebrate dams coming out of their rivers as well, and the restoration to the water and the people and the animals and everything, because, you know, like witnessing it firsthand, like, that's beautiful, you mm-hmm. know, and that's like what the world deserves, and that's like what we deserve, is to have clean water and healthy water and healthy people. So yeah
I'm also, I mean, you've talked about it a little bit, but I'm curious about your experience of being a part of this and like how it felt mm-hmm. to participate in this for you.
Yeah, this was like I said, it was definitely the peak of being at Underscore. I've been here for 3 years now, and been talking with Danielle and some of the other people for over 2 years now about this specific story. And like, we were even talking about like how cool it would be to potentially even get to like experience it myself. And then I got to do it with Jesse and Kyra from our team and stuff. And it was just so fun. And it was also off the tail end of my month-long vacation. I went back home to Montana and got to spend time with my family. And while I was back home, I was learning how to kayak. I haven't really ever been a kayaker before, but I was like, I'm not going down this 300-mile long river not knowing how to take care of myself. Luckily, I didn't have to like get in a kayak. We were on a raft, but that was also really cool. Our rafting company, like our raft guide, she was Native, and her younger brother was on the descent, and just to be able to witness their, like, witness it from all different sides, you know, like it was really cool. And like being there at the final landing, and it was like super foggy that morning. And you could barely see the kayaks coming through the fog, but they're bright colored, neon colored kayaks. And then I was sitting there, and then, you know, we hear a couple of hand drum singers singing their hand drum songs. And then in the front is their traditional red redwood dugout canoes. And they came in and did the final landing, you know, paying respect to their traditional water vessels. And while I was sitting there taking photos and videos, I hear this elder, and she was one of the oldest people in their community, Sweet Gram, I believe is what they called her. And I was sitting in front of her and a couple other people, and that's when she apologizes for crying. And like, as seeing that moment, and then all of the women that were behind her and on the side of her, they were like, no, grandma, it's okay. It's okay to cry. Crying's healing, you know, and like just being able to experience those different things of seeing the healing, of seeing like these elders be excited to see their youth coming in living out their dreams and all this stuff. So yeah, that was definitely a special moment. And I too, one day, if I ever have children or grandchildren, I'll definitely tell my nieces and my cousins about it. But like, this is like one of the reasons why I wanted to get into journalism, is to be able to share these types of stories and to be on this side of the history, you know, like sharing it through an Indigenous person's perspective. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Of course. Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to mention?
I would just love to add that we would love for people to read our work, and you could visit all of that stuff at _spelledout.news, UNDERSCORE.news. And yeah, follow us on all of the different social media platforms to keep in contact with us. And if you ever have any story ideas, definitely send them our way. Kenny Hale.
You've been listening to an interview with Underscore Native News reporter Jarrett Work on his article about the historic Indigenous youth-led descent of the 300-mile Klamath River since it was undammed. You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. We'll be right back.
KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye.
KBOO is loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots,